Hello. My name is Leslie. Thank you for asking me to read excerpts from Dr. Ed's morning briefing, which is dated Tuesday, February 11, 2020. The first topic focuses on China syndromes. The China Syndrome is a 1979 movie starring Jane Fonda as reporter Kimberly Wells. She witnesses an accident at a nuclear power plant and is determined to expose it to the public. Her cameraman Richard Adams, played by Michael Douglas, secretly films the panic among the crew at the plant's control room during a near meltdown of the nuclear reactor. Needless to say, the powers that be do everything they can to hide the narrowly averted disaster. The term China Syndrome describes a fictional result of a nuclear meltdown, where reactor components melt through their containment structures and into the underlying earth, all the way to China. In March 1979, a series of mechanical and human errors at the nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island in south-central Pennsylvania caused the worst commercial nuclear accident in U.S. history, resulting in a partial meltdown that released dangerous radioactive gases into the atmosphere. The Chernobyl disaster was a nuclear accident that occurred during April 1986 at the No. 4 nuclear reactor in the Chernobyl nuclear power plant near the city of Pripyat in the north of the Ukrainian SSR. The event was depicted in a 2019 historical drama television miniseries produced by HBO. Could the recent virus outbreak in China do to China anything like the Chernobyl nuclear catastrophe did to the Soviet Union, arguably setting the stage for its rapid collapse by manifesting the consequences of incompetency and corruption in a national government? In his 2018 book Predicting the Markets, Dr. Ed wrote, quote, "One of the most momentous events during my career was the end of the Cold War in 1991. I had seen it coming a few years earlier and wrote a topical study during August 1989 titled, The Triumph of Capitalism. I observed that about 1 year after Mikhail S. Gorbachev became the General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party, the nuclear reactor at Chernobyl blew up. The explosion, on April 26, 1986, released at least as much radiation as in the atomic bomb attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That event and other recent disasters in the Soviet Union were bound to convince Gorbachev of the need to restructure the Soviet economic and political systems, I surmised. Likely, he would conclude that a massive restructuring was essential and urgent because the disasters were symptomatic of a disastrous economic system that is no longer just stagnating. Rather, it is on the brink of collapse," I wrote back then. The Berlin Wall was dismantled in late 1989. Unquote. China's economy is in much better shape today than was the Soviet Union's economy before it disintegrated. However, the virus outbreak has the potential to cause a social explosion that could set the stage for the meltdown of the communist regime. Consider the following 4 points. Point number one. The death of Dr. Li. The 2/7 BBC News website reported, quote, "The death of a Chinese doctor who tried to warn about the coronavirus outbreak has sparked widespread public anger and grief in China. Li Wenliang died after contracting the virus while treating patients in Wuhan. Last December he sent a message to fellow medics, warning of a virus he thought looked like SARS, another deadly coronavirus. But he was told by police to stop making false comments and was investigated for spreading rumors. Analysts say it is hard to recall an event in recent years that has triggered as much online grief, rage and mistrust against the Chinese government. News of Dr. Li's death became the top trending topic on Chinese social media, garnering an estimated 1.5 billion views. His death has also brought demands for action. Point number two. Autocrats pose a health risk. In the 1/28th morning briefing, Dr. Ed observed, quote, "Another potential positive outcome of the outbreak would be if China's autocratic regime is forced by internal political forces to be less autocratic as a result of this health crisis. The Chinese people have been willing to give up many of their freedoms in exchange for better economic conditions. If health issues become a major source of popular discontent, the government's credibility and supremacy could be sorely tested." Unquote. An opinion piece in the 2/6 Washington Post was titled Warning: Chinese authoritarianism is hazardous to your health. It observed, quote, "The Chinese Communist Party has once again proved that authoritarianism is dangerous not just for human rights, but also for public health. Confronted with the Wuhan virus outbreak, the CCP has instinctively reverted to its familiar toolkit. It immediately staged a large-scale lockdown of people and information at the expense of the public good." Unquote. The government touted the construction of a hospital in 10 days with 1,000 beds. By some accounts, it resembles a prison. Meanwhile, since it was built, more than 20,000 people have been infected. The author concludes, quote, now, with the outbreak spreading from Wuhan to the far reaches of the globe, the regime has again proved itself a danger to civilization. It has succeeded in turning a public health crisis into a human rights catastrophe. Unquote. A two-halves Bloomberg opinion piece is less alarmist. It is titled Wuhan Isn't China's Chernobyl. The author observes that Moscow's grip on power was much weaker than Beijing's grip is today. The Soviet economy was a basket case before Chernobyl hit. China's economic growth rate has been slowing, but it is growing. Nevertheless, the article noted, quote, according to The Lancet, the first known patient developed symptoms as early as December 1. China alerted the World Health Organization by the end of the month. While the first death occurred in early January, full alarm and lockdown didn't ensue until January 23, days before the Lunar New Year holiday. By that point, millions of students, migrant workers and travelers had already left the city. Unquote. Point number three. Another reason to move supply chains out of China. Many companies were starting to consider diversifying their supply chains out of China, as President Trump escalated his trade war with China during 2018 and 2019. Many companies have been doing just that, and now many more may decide to do so, as a result of the disruptions caused by the health crisis in China. The 2/8 Wall Street Journal reported, quote, China extended its New Year holidays 3 days to February 2, and kept most businesses shut thereafter to combat the outbreak. Many factories are scheduled to reopen Monday, although it is unclear how many can. Many workers can't leave their hometowns, and employers still have to pay them. Factories that do open might have to operate with lower productivity because of labor shortage, new screening requirements and lack of parts. Also affected have been shipments via air and water. Since the virus outbreak, more than a dozen countries have stopped flights to and from China, and ships have been held back from calling. Unquote. The 2/8 CNBC article titled Crisis Mode. Coronavirus disrupts the heart of electronics manufacturing in China reported. Quote, factories in China, the center of the electronics industry supply chain, have been closed for an extended Lunar New Year holiday and the outbreak of the deadly coronavirus. Most are expected to reopen on Monday, a week later than scheduled. But quarantines and other measures put in place to stop the spread of the disease in China could continue to disrupt electronics manufacturing well into the 2020 holiday season, even if factories quickly return to full production, manufacturing experts said. Unquote. Point number four. The Great Quarantine of China. A week ago, Dr. Ed noted that many countries have banned flights in and out of China. Russia has closed its border with China, which has quarantined Wuhan, where the outbreak began, and other major cities in Hubei province. Foreign governments have been airlifting their citizens out of Wuhan and placing them in isolation for 14 days, which is believed to be how long it takes for the virus's symptoms to show up. Apple shut its 40-plus stores on the Chinese mainland. So did IKEA. In a 2/7 CNBC interview, our good friend Ed Hyman, the chairman of Evercore ISE, said, quote, our team has GDP growth at zero for the first quarter. China is really slowing, and that's worrying people for sure. Unquote. We agree. In other words, China's mighty economy is likely to come to a standstill during the current quarter. On 2/4, The Atlantic posted a series of photos showing empty streets in China as a result of the coronavirus outbreak. Quote, as authorities and health workers try to halt the spread of the novel virus outbreak in China, travel restrictions and quarantine measures have left many streets, parks, and shopping centers essentially deserted in cities across China. Unquote. Major cities such as Wuhan, Shanghai, and Beijing look like ghost towns. The second topic focuses on the global economy before Wuhan. The global economy was starting to show some signs of better growth just before the virus news hit the tape on 1/24. Consider the following 5 points. Point number one, global economy. The global CPMI rose during January to 52.2, up from a recent low of 50.9 during October, and the best reading since last March. Leading the way has been the global New Mexico PMI. The global MPMI has remained slightly above 50.0 for the past 3 months, after falling below that level from May through October 2019. Point number two, advanced economies. January's MPMI for the advanced economies remained below 50.0 for the 9th consecutive month, but its reading of 49.8 was the index's best since April 2019. The New Mexico PMI for the advanced economies rose from a recent low of 50.7 during October to 52.8 during January. Point number 3, emerging economies. The CPMI, MPMI, and New Mexico PMI of the emerging economies have shown more resilience in recent months than those of the advanced economies. That's especially true for the MPMI, which was 51.0 during January for the former economies, but 49.8 for the latter. Point number 4, Eurozone sentiment. Another upbeat economic statistic during January was the Eurozone's economic sentiment indicator. It rose from a recent low of 100.7 during October to 102.8 during January. Admittedly, that's not much of an uptick, but it suggests that the worst is over for the slowdown in the region's real GDP growth since mid-2018. Point number 5, German manufacturing. Also showing a small rebound in recent months has been Germany's Ifo Business Confidence Index. This upturn follows a sickening plunge in this index during 2019. Still sickening is the plunge in the 12-month sum of German passenger car registrations from 5.6 million units during summer 2018 to only 4.6 million units at the start of 2020. During December, German manufacturing orders and production were down 8.7% YY and 7.6% YY, respectively. The third section focuses on rebounding U.S. productivity. Before Wuhan hit the fan, the U.S. economy was also showing signs of rebounding, in response to the de-escalation of Trump's trade wars, especially with China. The Phase 1 trade deal between the U.S. and China, which was signed on January 15, promised to boost U.S. exports to China. A significant slowdown in China's economy as a result of the virus outbreak could make that less likely in the near future. In addition, supply chain disruptions could weigh on U.S. companies, as manufacturing firms face shortages of parts and retailers shortages of goods. The good news in the U.S. is that the labor market remains strong, as evidenced by January's employment report. In addition, productivity growth seems to be making a comeback. Notwithstanding the continuing strength in the monthly employment gains, many companies continue to report shortages of workers. Debbie and I have predicted that they would respond to these shortages by boosting productivity. Productivity is measured using the output of the non-farm business, NFB, sector, which has been growing somewhat faster than real GDP since the start of the current economic expansion. So for example, the former was up 2.7% YY during Q4 to 2019, while the latter was up 2.3%. Over that same period, NFB hours worked rose just 0.9%, possibly reflecting the slowdown in labor force growth. The result was a 1.8% increase in NFB productivity. For all of 2019, productivity rose 1.7%, the best pace since 2010, accelerating from 2016's 0.3%. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to me today. Links to figures and sources are available on the email and website posts of this morning briefing. Please see the hedge clause on our website www.yordani.com. Have a great day.